Namacharya Shilahuridas Thakur Gijay Parem Se Goho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nichananda Shidwaya Gadadha Shivasati Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Gijay Shri Shri Radhakrishna Gopa Gopinath Shayam Kun Radhakunda Kiri Govardhan Gijay Vrindavanam Gijay Maturidam Gijay Jagadavisami Gijay Yuvanamai Gijay Shimali Talasi Devi Gijay Sama Veda Vakta Vrindigajaya Gaur Premananda All glories to the assembled devotees, all glories assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Nama om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pastaya Mudale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Namni Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pacharini Vishesha Shanyavani Paschacha Deja Tarni. So we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 3rd canto, 13th chapter, text 27. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Ukshipta Vala Ka Chara Kathora Sata Vidundan Kara Pramasha Twak Kura Hata Vraha Sata Dhamstra Iksha Jyotir Vavase Bhagavan Mahidra Ukshipta Valakka Chara Kathura Sata Vidunvan Karamasha Twak Rahatapra Sita Damstra Iksha Jyotir Vavase Bhagavan Mahitra Ukshipta Vala Kachara Katora Sata vidunvan kararam shatvak Kurata prasita dhamstra iksha Jyotir vavase bhagavan mahitra Ukshipta vala kachara kathora Shata vidun van kararom shatvak Kurata tapra sita tamstra hiksha Jyotir vavase bhagavan mahidraha
Satavidunvan karoma satvak, Satavidunvan karoma satvak, Kurahata prasita damstra iksha, Kurahata Kacharakapura.
Uchitama Kacharakapura.
Avidunban Kararoma Shatva.
Satavidunban Kararoma Shatva.
Kahatabra Sita Damstra Iksha.
Kurahatabra Sita Damstra Iksha.
Jyotirvabhase Bhagavan Mahirka.
Jyotirvabhase Bhagavan Mahirka.
That's it.
Ladies.
Oh, any ladies?
Uchitamala Kacharakatura.
Uchitamala Kacharakatura.
Satavidunvan Kararoma Shatva.
Satavidunvan Kararoma Shatva.
Ravata Vrasita Dhamstra Iksha.
Ravata Vrasita Dhamstra Iksha.
What else? Okay. Ukshipta valaha. Slashing with the tail.
Kog
charaha.
In the sky.
Katoraha.
Very hard.
Sataha,
hairs on the shoulder.
Vidandan, quivering.
Kara,
sharp.
Romashatvak,
skin full of hairs.
Kura
ahata, struck by the hooves. Abraha, the clouds.
Sita,
Damstraha,
white tusks.
Iksha,
glance.
Jyotihi,
luminous.
Pavase,
began to emit an effulgence.
Bhagavan, the personality of Godhead.
Mahidraha,
supporter of the world.
Translation.
Before entering the water to rescue the earth, Lord Boar flew in the sky, slashing his tail, his hard hairs quivering. His very glance was luminous, and he scattered the clouds in the sky with his hooves and his glittering white tusks. So, purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki. Jai. When the Lord is offered prayers by His devotees, His transcendental activities are described. Here are some of the transcendental features of Lord Boar. As the residents of the upper three planetary systems offered their prayers to the Lord, it is understood that His body expanded throughout the sky, beginning from the topmost planet, Brahmaloka or Satyaloka. It is stated in the Brahma Samhita that His eyes are the sun and the moon, and therefore His very glance over the sky was as illuminating as the sun or the moon. The Lord is described herein as Mahidraha, which means either a big mountain or sustainer of the earth. In other words, the Lord's body was as big and hard as the Himalayan mountains. Otherwise, how was it possible that He kept the entire earth on the support of His white tusks? The poet Jayadeva, the great devotee of the Lord, has sung of the incident in his prayers for the incarnations. Vasati dasharasi kore davane tapalagna shashani kalanka kaleva nimagna keshavadrita shukara rupa chayadagadi shahure. All glories to Lord Keshava Krishna, who appeared as the boar. The earth was held between His tusks, which appeared like the scars on the moon. So, again the verse. Ukshiptavala gachara kathura satavidunvan kararom shatvak karahatabra sita dhamstra daksha
Shatir Bhavase Bhagavan Mahidraha. So, Omagana Timidanda Shah Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Meditam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So it's interesting that Srila Prabhupada here makes reference to Jayadeva Goswami. Jayadeva Goswami is, of course, one of the great devotees whom Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu read the books of. Jayadeva Goswami, Bilbo Mangal Thakur, and some other devotees. And Jayadeva Goswami has this very interesting intimate book, Gita Govinda, I was thinking of Krishnas Kaviraj Goswami. Gita Govinda. And this Gita Govinda is very intimate. And in the Gita Govinda, you find the Dashavatar slokas. And this proves the point that I was making yesterday in class, that when a devotee sees the various incarnations of the Lord, he actually sees, at least a devotee of Krishna, he sees Keshava Drita, Narahari Rupa, Keshava Drita, Rama Sharira, Keshava Drita, Haladara Rupa, etc. He sees Krishna doing all these things. So he doesn't see anyone else other than Krishna, and that way I was actually explaining Srila Prabhupada's statement that one should not meditate on any other form other than Krishna. Vrindavan, which Prabhupada makes that statement in the Bhagavad Gita. So, in the prayers to Lord Nrisimhadeva, you have this Adbhuta Srinu. Adbhuta. I mean, just amazing what Krishna does. And I was thinking about this in relationship to Krishna's incarnations and also in relationship to one of the verses I quoted yesterday from the Brahma Samhita, Dvaita Chuta Nari Ramantu Rupa Madhya Purana Parsham Naviyoganam Cha. That God is one. We are not polytheists. A polytheist is one who thinks that there's many gods. Just like if you go into a Hindu temple, we were just looking, actually yesterday, at some of the Hindu temples in New Orleans, and they had many, many different altars. Because I was trying to see, you know, what is, not our competition, we don't have any competition. It's like, you know, like Tesla has no competition. So I was just looking at some of the, you know, seeing what other temples are there in New Orleans. And there's all these altars, and if you go into the temple, they'll usually say to you, these are the gods. And of course, there's a typical story that Prabhupada tells about the Englishman who walked into a Hindu temple, and he saw all these different altars in the Hindu temple, and he immediately pointed out Krishna and Radha, and said, this person is God. And the priest, he didn't even know, even though he had studied all the Vedic literatures, what is this? Vedeshu Durilabham, Adurilabham Atma Bhakto. This is really interesting. Vedeshu Durilabham, Adurilabham Atma Bhakto. What does that mean? It means you cannot understand things unless you take shelter of a devotee. Even if you study the Vedas, Trigunya Vishaya Veda Nish Trigunya Babarjana, Nir Dhanbo Nir Rishakrishto Nir Yogakshema Atmavan. So even if you study the Vedic literatures, you're not going to be able to understand what the purpose is, or who Krishna is, or who God is. And also you have that statement in the Mahabharata, Tarko Pratishta Shrutina Vibhina, that one can't understand the absolute truth or understand the goal of the Vedas simply by studying the Vedas, nor by logic and reasoning. The Vedas are very multi-branched, but only by Mahajanayena Gatasapanta, only by approaching the devotee. So, of course, this Englishman, who I just related to, who walked into the Hindu temple, wasn't exactly a devotee, but at least he had some common sense. Sometimes, you know, Vedavatarata, you know, people just get confused by hearing all the things in the Vedas and all the rituals and everything like that. And they become more confused than just like a simple devotee or a simple, even non-devotee, who walks into the temple. So this Englishman obviously, absolutely, immediately understood that Krishna was God because, as he related to the Pujari. Here is someone who is not doing any work. The rest of the deities are doing some work, or they're meditating, or whatever they're doing. And he's just with his girlfriend, playing a flute. And you see all these demigods, they're not usually playing a flute. So he must be God. So that's Krishna. So, in any case, so Krishna's two Bhagavan Swayam. Krishna's the original Supreme Personality of God. And the devotees see, the devotees of Krishna see all the other incarnations as manifestations of him. Not only the incarnations, but we see the sun as his eye, and the moon, of course. And we see the mountains as, of course, the universal form. You see the mountains as the stacks of bones. I don't really see like that when I look at the mountains. I see the mountains as just like Krishna's energy. Yomam pasyati sarvatra sarvam chamai pasyati tashaham na pranashyami sacha mai na pranashyati. Does anyone know that verse? 6:30 in the Bhagavad Gita. That one should see, Krishna says, one who sees me everywhere and sees everything in me is never lost to me, nor am I ever lost to him. So one should see Krishna everywhere. And another verse, of course, Premanjana Charita Bhakti Vulachanina. So when we hear about this amazing activity, then we just see Krishna. Krishna is so wonderful. Or when we look at the material energy. For example, one of the things that I've been doing lately, or but the last 2 years, is looking at the material energy. Not that I'm in Maya. Looking at the material energy. But I'm examining things in order to present Krishna consciousness in a scientific way to the university students or intelligent people. And one of the main things that really Prabhupada stressed was proving life comes from life, or things are designed at least. And so I've been studying this material energy, of course, for many lifetimes. And I'm immersed in material energy for many lifetimes, that's true. But, studying certain aspects of the material energy, especially biology. And biology is quite interesting, and especially in biology, I've been studying about the cell. I sort of mentioned a little bit of this yesterday. That the cell, each and every cell of your body has 9 billion entities in it. And these 9 billion entities are not just 9 billion little atoms, floating around doing nothing, but they're actually functional machines. Can you imagine that? Like machines inside each and every, how small a cell is in the body? Incredibly small. And so, you look at these things, and not only the machines, they're not just like some gears that are meshing with other gears and things like that. Some of the things are like that in there, especially the powerhouse of the cells.
Mitochondria.
What?
Mitochondria.
Yeah, mitochondria. Yeah, that's like the ones that the powerhouse of the soul is something like gears. And also, if you happen to be a little microorganism with a flagella on them, then you actually have a propeller that spins 100,000 revolutions a minute. And there's no Teflon there. There's no oil. Can you imagine like your car? Your car doesn't spin at 100,000 revolutions per minute. I mean, the metal would actually just melt down. So there's like little motors that spin at 100,000 revolutions per minute. I mean, revolution means turning around, right? And it's simply amazing. And then not only that, you have entities that walk around inside the cell. You know about this? There's one called a kinesin. Does anyone know about these things? No. It's actually a thing with legs on it that walks around carrying the cellular garbage from one part of the cell, garbage man. And if he runs into an obstacle, he just, I'm going around him. Because there may be another kinesin, and they just decide, inside the cell, we just go on the right side of the road instead of the left side of the road. They're Americans, not British. So, it's a joke. So you got these amazing things happening, which obviously, you know, if you understand mathematics, it could never come about by chance. It's so improbable that it's impossible. When you got something improbable, incredibly improbable over the space or time span of the whole universe and space of the whole universe, then it's impossible, basically. So you're looking at these things, and you know, I'm looking at these things and I'm thinking, wow, Krishna is wonderful. You know, it's just like, wow, isn't Krishna just wonderful? How we can do that? And then, of course, there's that story the Prabhupada tells about the cobbler and the Brahmin, right? How, I'm not going to tell the whole story, but the cobbler is just thinking, my God is wonderful. He can put a whole tree into a seed. The plants for the whole tree and the ingredients for the whole tree and everything. All you got to do is water it, give it some nutrition, and you got a tree. Where's the scientist who can do such a thing like that? You just water it, you know, and you get a car. I wish it was like that. I mean, to save some money. Water. This is a Tesla seed. This is a GMC truck. No, you don't like GMC. This is a Ford truck. And you just water it and you get a whole truck. But the tree or the human being, you know, the sperm and the ovum, you know, you put them together and you get a person. There's little tiny, teeny, teeny, teeny things. Isn't that amazing? Adbhuta. It's amazing. I mean, who can do such a thing like that? And the scientists are still saying, what are they saying? That life comes from a chance combination of inorganic matter. That's incredible. That's stupid. That's idiotic. But when the scientists come to their conclusions, they come to their conclusions seen through a certain lens. And that lens is materialism. In other words, that's how you're supposed to define it. You have to throw out any hypothesis, I mean his guess, that there's a God, and really it's called methodological materialism. That's their method of examining things. And so, but when we see things, anything in this world, you know, the Lord Bohr, of course, if I saw Lord Bohr, I'd really be impressed. But actually, just as impressive is a cell in the body as Lord Bohr, or a tree, a seed of a tree, or, and a cloud in the sky, or the, you know, different fruits that are growing from the trees, or a human body. I mean, all the time we're actually surrounded by things that are just impressive, isn't it?
Miraculous.
It's a miracle. It's mystical. Isn't it? It's just like, wow. So everything should remind us of Krishna. What to speak of, you know, Krishna's pastimes. I mean, they're miraculous, but, you know, sometimes devotees have this faith. How could this happen? You know, so how could Krishna marry 16,108 wives? You know, most people are struggling with one wife or one husband. I mean, even to hear a story of Chitraketu, he had 10 million wives. That means, what's the population of Mississippi?
3 million, something like
that. So like three times the population of Mississippi. One guy, yeah, how did he manage the whole thing? But it's, you know, so sometimes devotees have this, like, challenge in their faith. I mean, sometimes things are hyperboles in the Bhagavatam, but that's a study of hermeneutics. But, you know, sometimes devotees have these challenges of faith. But if God can put a tree into a seed, or God can put 9 billion parts into one cell, then what's the problem with one guy marrying 10 million wives? But don't try that at home. All right. You know, you hear all these stories, Shobri Muni, of course, he didn't have 10 million wives, he only had 50. That's nothing. So, then you can actually understand that anything is possible if Krishna wants it. Or you hear the story about Krishna in the form of Mahavishnu lying down and all the universe is coming from him. You say, this is wow, how could that happen? Isn't it? How could that happen? Or Lord Vishnu, the Garbhadaksha Vishnu in the universe lying down, you know, in the Garbhadak ocean which he creates from his own sweat. And out of his navel comes a lotus flower. And then a kid comes out of there. Of course, the kid's name is Lord Brahma. It's amazing. And just think of all the things that we believe in. I mean, if you actually start telling people who are not Krishna conscious about these things, they'll think, this is weird. Yeah, it's no more weird than what they believe in. It's no more weird than what's happening in the cell. It's no more weird. It's no more unusual. And Krishna can do everything. That's our faith, that Krishna, he can do anything. He's up to kama. Whatever he wants happens just by his wanting it. Parasya shaktir. Vipadaiva shuyateshva bhavaki yada balakriyacha. He has all these energies, and he just wants it to happen. Anything can happen. Amazing, like that. And one of the things I was thinking about that's really amazing that Krishna does, in his various incarnations, not only does he appear in all these adbhuta, amazing forms, but actually in many of his incarnations, he interacts with himself in terms of his expansion. He interacts with himself, and sometimes he even disagrees with himself. Now, I'll give you an example. You may think, what's going on here? Maharaj is having, what did he smoke this morning? So, let's take the story in the Mahabharata of how Duryodhana wanted to marry Subhadra, and Balaram arranged the whole marriage. Right? Because Balaram, the name for Balaram is Duryodhana Guru. He's the guru of Duryodhana. Actually, Prabhupada named one of his disciples Duryodhana Guru. Of course, the devotees always just call him what? Duryodhana. So it's, you got to be really careful once you name people. Like if you name Kamsa Vishudana, then everyone will just call you Kamsa. So you got to be real. That's why I figure you got to be really careful when you give someone a killing demon name. So Duryodhana was the disciple of Balaram. He was the martial arts, you know, club fighting. So Duryodhana, really, this was his intention, and it was all. This whole plan was designed by nice Shakuni. Everybody know who Shukuni is? Mm-hmm. Uncle Shukuni.
Mm-hmm. Gandhari's brother.
Yes. He's a wonderful guy. Actually, he was sent by Krishna to stir up everything else. And the Mahabharata described that Shukuni and Duryodhana were Kaliyadwarpa. So Duryodhana really wanted to marry Subhadra because he wanted to make a political alliance with the Yadu dynasty, so that Arjuna would be outflanked. You understand? Outflanked. That means Arjuna and the Pandavas wouldn't be able to challenge the Kurus because of that. You know, because the alliances were based upon marriages. There's a very important point in the Kshatriya marriages. It's not that someone just got married because, you know, it was love. They got married because it tied the kingdoms together. Even in the Muslim religion, you have Muhammad. He married, after his first wife passed away, He married all these princesses from all the neighboring tribes. That's how he got his power. So that's a Kshatriya thing. Of course, I'm not saying he was a Kshatriya, but that's a Kshatriya thing. So Duryodhana wanted to marry Subhadra, and Balaram, he went to Balaram and he said, Balaram, can I marry your sister? And Balaram said, yeah, let's go. And Krishna had a different idea. Krishna disagreed with his brother. That's amazing, isn't it? And so, but let's talk about the ontology here. Krishna and Balaram are basically the same person in God. Balaram's expansion of Krishna. But for pastime's sake, under the influence of Yoga Maya, Krishna appears simultaneously at the same place, not only in different places, unlimited places, but also at the same place. And he forgets that he's God, and he forgets that his brother is God. And also he violates etiquette, because according to Indian etiquette, if you got an older brother, Dalji, that means older brother, Balaram, you're supposed to listen to him. I mean, America, we don't understand this. You have an older brother, like I joined the Hare Krishna movement, I told my younger brother, okay, take up Krishna consciousness. He said, no. I said, I'm Dalji, older brother. And he said, no. He said, don't spoil my fun in the material world. And don't tell me about Krishna, because you'll spoil it for me. So anyway, so in India, the older brother has to be listened to. So Krishna disobeyed his older brother. So Krishna was thinking, you know, I want Arjuna to marry Subhadra. And then Krishna had to do something completely unacceptable according to the Vedic culture. He arranged for Arjuna to kidnap Subhadra, or Subhadra to kidnap Arjuna. That's another way of looking at it. And Balaram was really angry. And Krishna just like pacified him. And there's one instance, but there's actually many instances of this happening. Another instance was when Duryodhana had his thighs broken by Bhimsen. And then Krishna had to pacify Balaram. Because Krishna wasn't supposed to interfere, but he kept patting his thigh. You know, this is where you're supposed to hit him, you know, patting or pointing or something like that. And Bhimsen broke the thigh of Duryodhana. So isn't that amazing how the same person, and Krishna put himself on the yoga maya voluntarily, and he's there as Balaram, he's there. And they disagree with each other. I found that amazing, wonderful. Not just amazing, shocking, but it's wonderful how Krishna's just playing around like that. And then of course, there's other pastimes, not so much with disagreement. Yeah, actually, let's take Ram and Lakshman. You know, Lakshman, he actually always listened to his elder brother. He didn't like it sometimes, but Ram and Lakshman are the same person, right? The god. We don't have many gods. We're not polygamous. So there's Ram, Lakshman, Bart, and Shatrughna. So Ram says to Lakshman, prepare this funeral or this fire so that Sita Devi can enter. Or Ram says to Lakshman, what? Drop Sita Devi off in the forest. Can you imagine if your brother said to you, take my wife and just drop her off in the forest? How many of you would do that? Would anyone do that? Any volunteers? No, I don't think so. I don't think anybody here would do that. But Lakshman was so obedient, but he was really upset. In fact, he was so upset with Ram that he one time asked Ram for a benediction. I never want to be your younger brother again. Please give me that benediction. Therefore, he appeared as the elder brother. But when he appeared as the elder brother, as Balaram, and also Lord Nityananda, then The younger brother didn't listen to the older brother. So Lakshman lost out in both ways. Even when he got to be the elder brother, his younger brother didn't listen to him. Even with Lord Chaitanya's pastimes, we find that Lord Nityananda was given orders by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, even though Lord Nityananda was far older than Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And, of course, Balaram Hoile Natai, Lord Nityananda is Balaram, obviously. So he was given orders. Lord Chaitanya said, just stay in Bengal and don't come back to Jagannath Puri every year. But Lord Nityananda did anyway, because out of love. So you see these interesting exchanges. I mean, I can go through a whole bunch more of interesting exchanges between the Lord's various incarnations, such as when the Mahavishnu stole the babies of the Brahmin, and Krishna and Arjuna had to go to Mahavishnu to retrieve the kids. And Mahavishnu said, you know, I just did this because I wanted to see you. So these are all exchanges between the same person.
But obviously it seems that they are different because one is superior to the other.
Yeah, but there's the same person. So Prabhupada said, Krishna in the office. See, Prabhupada was very clear about this. He says, when Krishna goes to the office, he's Vishnu. And Krishna's at home, he's Krishna. But he can do both things simultaneously. They're not different persons. But there's a different manifestation. Like in Goloka Vrindavan, but Krishna manifests things that he doesn't manifest anywhere else, like the flute. Right? The flute, intimate devotees, you know, pastimes, etc. like that. And beauty, unexcelled beauty. So it's Advaita, Achyuta, Anadir, Anantarupa, Adyam Purana Purusham, Lavayovinam Cha, Vedeshu Durlabham, Adurlabham, Adnabhaktas. So they're not different persons, but the same person acting differently, simultaneously manifesting different aspects of his personality. I mean, like, in the... All right, let's go to the Brihad Bhagavatamrita. In the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, that's made very clear when Gopal Kumar goes to the spiritual world. He's interacting with Vishnu, and he sees Krishna there, and the Vishnu dutas tell him, what? This is not appropriate here. It's not appropriate. But then Vishnu is sort of like, Lord Vishnu is sort of, you know, saying, let's meet privately and talk about these things. So it's really interesting, these exchanges. But we shouldn't forget there's only one God. And he manifests himself differently in different places. Like Bhadurya Stone is one of the examples of Srila Prabhupada gives. So, yes, we have some questions.
Would it be something similar when in Mahabharata, when Krishna's there and they're all in the assembly and then they're giving their opinions and then Vyasadeva's there too?
Yeah. Vyasadeva happens to be a Shaktavesha avatar. He's not Vishnu Tattva. So it's a little different because of Shakta. There's different types of avatars or expansions of Krishna. One is the Shaktavesha avatar, of course, which is empowered entity, jiva soul. Like Prabhupada's a Shaktavesha avatar. And then you have, of course, there's the guna avatars, which are, one of them is Vishnu Tattva, which is Lord Vishnu. And then you have Brahma and Shiva. Shiva's of a special category. This is actually quite interesting about Lord Shiva. We've been having discussions about him. Because you'll find many injunctions in the Shastras that says that he's the Supreme Lord. So how do you explain that? And it's interesting, I taught, many years ago I was talking about this with my godbrother Gopi Puranadana Prabhu, who has since then, of course, passed away. And he explained that there is an expansion of Krishna, which is Vishnu Tattva in the spiritual world called Sadashiva. And that's the Shiva in the spiritual world, Sadashiva. Because the word Shiva is actually a name of Vishnu. If you read the Vishnu Sahasranam, that's one of the names in the Vishnu, which means auspicious. And that Sada Shiva is Vishnu Tattva, according to Gopi Pranadana Prabhu. And then the Shiva in this world, Shambhu is an expansion of him, the Rudras are expansions of him, but they're not Vishnu Tattva, they're a special Tattva, special category.
No, but they're not Jiva either.
No, they're not Jiva. They're a whole special category. Not Vishnu, not Jiva.
But Shiva.
Yeah. And it's like, they're like the milk, like Brahma Samhita talks about the milk that becomes transformed into yogurt. And then the milk that's transformed into yogurt can't be transformed the other way. So.
Is Advaita Gosai, is he an incarnation of Mahavishnu or Sadashiva?
Both. Both. Because Sadashiva is Vishnu Tattva and Mahavishnu is Vishnu Tattva. So he's both. That's why you read, many devotees get confused and they say, well, they think, Advaitacharya, he's Sadashiva. Is he Lord Shiva or is he Vishnu? But he's Vishnu. Because Sadashiva is a manifestation of Krishna in the spiritual world that's Vishnu Tattva. And that's a lot of devotees get confused about that point. Thinking, is he Shiva Tattva or is he Vishnu Tattva? What is he? But he's actually Vishnu Tattva. Because, obviously, Advaitacharya, Lord Chaitanya, Lord Nityananda, all Vishnu Tattva. Yeah. Something like that.
Maharaj, not so long ago, the GVC passed a resolution regarding ethics in ISKCON. My question is, what motivated them to tackle that subject matter, and what will be the goals, the benefits to apply ethics in the society?
Well, the goal of apply ethics in society is that's different from Sadashiva, but anyway, the goal to apply ethics in the society is, first of all, so we're cultivating the mode of goodness. Prabhupada said, you shouldn't lie, because if you lie to some and don't lie to others, then you'll develop a habit of lying. I've seen devotees who are out preaching and they lie when they're preaching for some purposes, and then they get in the habit of lying and they come back to the temple, and guess what? They're lying in the temple and cheating in the temple too. So once you actually get into the lower modes of nature, like lying and doing unethical things, it affects the consciousness. You can't just differentiate one part of your life from another part of your life. Another reason we should be ethical is that, Caesar's wife should be above suspicion. I don't know if you know that quote. That, we want people to accept our movement as a very serious spiritual movement. So we should be respectable people. And, there's many other reasons that, I'm sure if I thought about it, for being ethical. Also, we're ethical because we want loving exchanges between the devotees. We don't want cheating, lying, stealing between the devotees, because it divides the movement. So devotees should always tell the truth. Such a pretty tough. Yes, you have a question.
Yeah, back to the Buddha's question. So in general, Vyasadeva is a Satya Vaishavatar.
Yes, Prabhupada said that.
But in this kalpa, he's incarnated as Vishnu.
Well, Prabhupada, where does that state? Because Prabhupada said he's Satya Vaishavatar.
He's a literary incarnation of Vishnu. So
that's right. That's Shaktivesh.
In general, it's accepted that it's incarnation.
Yeah, that's Shaktivesh. Prabhupada says that. That's an incarnation of Vishnu.
So it's called Krishna Dvaipayanam, yes.
I know. That's Shaktivesh.
It's one potency.
It's a potency, the potency. He's an incarnation of the potency. Like the Kumaras, also, let's talk about incarnations, are called incarnations of the knowledge potency of the Lord. But they're not Vishnu Tattva. But they are incarnations.
Prithu also.
Yeah, Prithu also. Thank you for reminding me. Buddha also.
Right. It's also there in the Vishnu Sahasranam.
I know.
Vyasaya Vishnu Rupaya, Vyasa Rupaya Vishnu.
Yeah, I know that. I know that because he's Shaktivesh. Prabhupada, I'm just taking Prabhupada's words. Because Prabhupada explained that Vyasadeva is Shaktivesh avatar. I mean, I'm not. I'm approaching There's different ways of approaching the Vedas. I approach the Vedas through the lens of Srila Prabhupada's instructions. And some people approach Prabhupada through the Vedas lens. But I approach Prabhupada, I approach the Vedas through the lens of Prabhupada. Because Vedeshu Duralabhama Duralabhamatma Bhakto. You know, Kumaras are also considered incarnation. And then Guna avatars are considered incarnation. And actually the word Brahma is a name of Krishna too. Did you know that? Yeah, their names are Krishna. Indra. So, you know, you can get confused when you read the Vishnu Sahasranama too, because you have the names of the demigods, some of the demigods' names in the Vishnu Sahasranama. Indra means the greatest. Brahma means also the greatest. So these are names of Krishna. Shiva is the name of Krishna. Means auspicious. So it depends on the context. That's why it's very important to have an acharya, Srila Prabhupada, giving us the lens. And this is an important point. Thank you for bringing that up. Prabhupada gives us the lens to understand the Vedic literatures, because I would not have, or no one would have the ability to understand the Vedic literature except through the lens of the acharya. Vedesha dulabham adurlabham atmabhato govinda madhipurasham tamaham bhajami. So my approach to life, the Vedic literatures, is always through Srila Prabhupada's lens. Does that make sense? That's my hermeneutical, you know, if you really want to get into technical language. Hermeneutics means how do you understand or interpret. Of course, Prabhupada sometimes didn't like the word interpret, sometimes he used the word interpret. But how do you perceive things or understand things? You always have to have a lens through which, you know, it's like I have glasses. Or even without my glasses, I have my cataract lenses to see things through. So the lens that I'm using, the hermeneutical lens, hermeneutical means how do you understand things, but shastras is through Prabhupada. Is that clear? Yes, you have a question.
What was the need of creating demigods?
What was the need? Give them some service. Krishna could do everything without demigods, although the demigods are like, Prabhupada said, they're like his cabinet. You know, because Krishna, anatasya karyam karnam navijate, Krishna doesn't do anything immaterial. It's all done by his saikshita, his glance and his will. And so the demigods carry out Krishna's will. Now, it could be, those things could be done through other arrangements, however Krishna wants to arrange it. But there are these devotees who are sakama devotees. So, sakama devotees means they have some desire to fulfill.
He's fulfilling their desire.
Yeah, he's fulfilling their desire. I want to be a big controller. Yeah, I'd like to be GBC, so here I am, you know. You know, I always want to be the controller. Why do I only have one head? What's wrong? Next life, I get 4 heads, or 8 heads, or 16 heads, or how many more? 32.
How many shoulders does he have?
I don't know. How many arms? You know, anyway, so it's like the way I look at it is like a supercomputer with different processors. You know, you have 2 processors, 3 processors, a quantum computer, or whatever you might want to call it. Because you've got a bigger universe to take care of. Like when Lord Brahma came to see Krishna in Dwarka, Krishna sent the message, you know, which Brahma are you? Yeah. And Lord Brahma said, what did you mean by that? And then Krishna showed him all these other Lord Brahmas from all the different universes, some with, I think, thousands or millions of heads or something like that, offering obeisances. So this whole material world is so incredible. And the only way I know of making sense of it is through Srila Prabhupada's instructions, or Srila Prabhupada's lens that he gives us. And the Vedas are so multifarious. Vedeshu Durlabham. And then also Shruti Na Vibina, you know, the Mahabharata statement. They're so multifarious. I mean, if you go to the Rig Veda, you'll see most of the injunctions are about worshiping Indra. I'm not going to worship Indra. I got to be careful, because it may rain today. Anyway, so...
It is
going to rain today, actually. It is?
Maybe.
It's either today
or yesterday.
Okay, Indra, you're nice. Om Indraya Namaha, Indraya Namaha, Indraya Namaha. I'm not as bold as Krishna was. You know, Indra comes and wants some worship. Fine, here's some worship for you. So you can get confused. I mean, that's why there's all these branches of Hinduism. And, you know, people are very confused. Very, very confused about things. But, you know, Prabhupada just, like, clears the air, isn't it? Prabhupada just, like, clears the air, cleans the lens, and, okay, this is the way it is, Prabhus. Wow. And it's really clear, isn't it? But Prabhupada said Shaktabesh. But that's also Vishnu. He's empowered. Right? He's empowered. Prabhupada's an incarnation too. Not Vishnu Tattva. Bhaktivinoda Thakur is an incarnation. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, you could say Guru Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj, incarnation. But they're not Vishnu.
It seems like sometimes, though, the Shaktivesh Avatar may have a different beginning, and then by his determination and his devotion,
he becomes Shaktivesh. Yeah.
Gets empowered to do so.
Sometimes it seems like that, and sometimes it actually goes through that. And sometimes he's just making believe he's an ordinary person. Prabhupada was asked one time, why does Krishna put his devotee through all this difficulty? Prabhupada said, to glorify him. So we see Prabhupada actually directly said that he was asked to come down from the spiritual world. Prabhupada said there was never a time when he forgot Krishna. But then why did he have to go through that whole struggle? Why did Prabhupada, when he had the dream of his spiritual master saying, take sannyas, why was Prabhupada horrified? This is Yogamaya. Yogamaya, he was always a pure devotee. It's not that he was materially attached. He was responsible. He was, you know, because someone in the mode of goodness is responsible. If they're married, they'll feel responsibility. It wasn't a material attachment. It was shastric. You know, people think that being attached and taking care of your family is material. It's not. It's shastric. It's actually Krishna conscious. Offering respects to your father and mother, etc., is the austerities of the body, according to Krishna and the Gita. Right? Being truthful. Krishna says, what does he say? Sacha Priya Hitam. Being truthful is Krishna conscious. You say, well, no, I'm supposed to lie. Look at Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita. He told you to steer the lie. So I'm going to lie to preach Krishna consciousness. You know? But that's not what Prabhupada wanted. You lie when Krishna directly tells you to do it. Or if you're in a dangerous situation, you've got to save someone's life. That's obvious. You know, someone comes up with a gun and says, where is Gokul? You want to kill him. I'll say, I don't know him. Who are you talking about? I'll lie. I'll say, I never heard of him. Because I'll lie to save someone's life. I mean, of course, Shukracharya has a different opinion. He says one can lie when talking to a lady or getting married.
He had a respect for Maya. I mean, Yoga Mahapur, even like Haridas Thakur being not only tested by courtesan, but or a prostitute, but actually being tested by Yoga Maya herself.
Yeah.
And so there's one incident where Prabhupada said, I was sitting on a bench and this beautiful woman, yeah, I think he says she was a prostitute, and not that all women are prostitutes, just that this one was. And so he chanted Hare Krishna very loudly, not to be fooled. It's not like it's a done deal.
Yeah. But Prabhupada said the trouble with our Western boys and girls, we're not enough afraid of Maya. So a devotee is very much afraid of Maya. Prabhupada, isn't that one statement Prabhupada said, I'm just praying to Krishna not to fall down or something?
Yeah, that's right. There is something like that.
Yeah, so, I remember reading that. He was saying, he saw, told the disciple he would never fall down. It was in Facebook. And the disciple was praying to Krishna not to fall down. And the disciple said, well, I thought you couldn't fall down. And Prabhupada said, this is why.
That's right.
He also said no fear. He had no fear.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's because he's praying.
Yeah.
Yeah, because
it's an
example.
Well, he set it an example, but if you think you can't fall down, you will fall down.
Yeah.
That's the humility. The quality of a pure devotee is humility. You know, so a pure devotee is not going around like, I'm a pure devotee, you know, why come, you know, I can handle you. That's why you got Prabhupada sitting on the bench and the girl was there. She must have really had a heart attack. I was just picturing that when you get told me that story, you know, so some girl sits down on the bench. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. At least she became Krishna conscious after that point. She remembered that day for the rest of her life. So maybe we should end now because we have a midday program. Okay, thank you very much. All glories to His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai. Hey, Pran Govinda just messaged me. That's nice.